They fight for Fanes. So long as you are in it, they will fight for you.
We're leaving, the man said. He eyed Morella. Most of us, anyway.
What will make you stay? Falcon asked. He could see how some of the Terrans were whispering behind their hands and pointing at his bruised and blooded face. The man seemed surprised to be asked. No one asked him. No one asked any of them.
Well, I'm asking now.
It will take more than empty promises. Proof. We need proof that your people can change. Even then, it might not be enough.
But it was enough, Falcon knew.
If this man, even for a second, was willing to consider staying, there was hope.
You shall have your proof.
62. The Southern Empire, the Burning Sea. Grey Aris.
Is he?
Kyla's question fell off a cliff.
She's alive,
Grey thought for the millionth time. The thought applied to both Shay and Kyla, but perhaps not to Eric and Captain Smithers, both of whom were in battles for their lives. Eric's severed leg had been seared with fire to stop the bleeding, but he hadn't awoken, his chest rising and falling as steadily as the waves. Captain Smithers, on the other hand, was awake, staring at them with wide eyes, salt staining his thick beard. The man released a scream as one of Eric's sailors, who had experience with healing, tended to him. A splintered shard of wood, the length of Grey's arm, protruded from the captain's abdomen. Kyla gripped Grey's hand harder.
Is he?
She tried to ask again, unable to finish the question. Grey couldn't lie to her, not after all she'd been through already.
I don't know,
he said, shaking his head.
But there's a chance, right?
If Grey told the truth, that he didn't think so. He knew it would only make things worse. So he said nothing. The healer packed more thick cloths around the wound, trying to soak up the blood leaking from the sides as he prepared to remove the wooden shard. He turned to Grey.
Get her out of here. I need your help.
Kyla said, Grey, no. I'm staying.
Her brilliant brown eyes were as wide as the full moons before they kissed. They were drowning.
Kyla, you can't be here. Not now. Please, help Shay. I will come find you as soon as your father is resting. No.
She blinked back the tears. A gruff voice, strained but still full of a surprising amount of strength, spoke from behind Grey.
Yes, my daughter,
Captain Smithers said.
Listen to Grey. Sometimes the lad is right.
A thin smile curled his lips, which were too pale. His usually dark skin was pale now, too.
Like a ghost, Grey thought, a chill running through him.
The man Grey knew was hale and hearty, not this broken fledgling. Kyla opened her lips to speak, closed them, nodded, said,
Fight, father. You must fight.
I always have, he said. I always will.
There were tears in his eyes now, too. Kyla rushed forward and held both his hands as she bit her bottom lip.
I am so,
he started to say.
Don't say it,
Kyla said, interrupting.
Don't you dare say it.
I love you, and I'm sorry for being a fool for so long.
I love you, too.
She rushed from the room, gone so fast it felt to Grey like she'd left an unfillable void in her wake. Grey turned back to the captain, a man he'd once despised, but now respected as much as anyone he knew.
You're not going to die, old man. You're immortal.
That drew a laugh, one that devolved into a phlegmy cough. Something wet sprayed, splashing against Grey's hand. When he looked, his skin was splattered with blood. His heart sank.
I wanted to tell her I'm so proud of her,
Smithers said, after he'd finished coughing up blood. He wiped the back of his arm across his lips, drawing a crimson smear along his skin.
You will, after you rest.
You can lie to me, but not
Gray opened his mouth, but the captain continued,
"Take care of her. Be better to her than I ever was."
"I will.
But she is strong. She takes care of herself." He nodded gravely.
"I know. She has so much of her mother in her."
He blinked back more tears.
"Let's get this over with. I feel like I have half the ship piercing my chest."
Gray nodded to the healer, who said, "As soon as I remove the shard, push these cloths in from the sides as quickly as you can. Put pressure on the wound. If we can slow the tide, perhaps I can stitch the flaps of skin back together."
Gray held the cloth on one side with his hand, tasting blood in his own mouth, where he'd bitten the side of his cheek hard enough to break through.
"On three. 1, 2, 3.
The man pulled, and at first nothing happened, save for another howl from Smithers as he jammed his eyes closed. Then there was a sucking, squelching sound, and the shard reversed from the captain's flesh amidst more screaming. Blood bubbled from the wound as quickly as Gray could shove the towels into his flesh, which gaped like a sinkhole. He pushed more in, but soon they were saturated too. It was like fighting a deluge with only a cap and a cape. Gray's final shreds of hope vanished as the captain's scream descended into ragged breaths and then the slow breathing of unconsciousness. The healer's hands pressed around his, helping to add towels to the mass already in the wound. It was a losing battle. The blood continued to flow like water through a breached dam. Gray was no longer covered in blood, having changed his clothes. But he still felt it on him, and he kept checking, expecting to find his fresh linen soaked through. Each time he looked, however, his clothes were dry. The soiled ones were balled up in a corner of the cabin, smeared with blood. Not his own. Not that it mattered. "Stop thinking like that," he thought. "Right now, it does matter. You are alive, and so are they." Still, he couldn't bring himself to enter the room, watching from the shadows. The cabin flickered with light from a lantern. Eric was propped up in bed, but still sleeping. Shay spooned small amounts of soup into the Pirate King's mouth, gently tipping his chin back to force him to swallow. Kyla dabbed a wet washcloth on his forehead, but even from this distance, Gray could see her hand shaking.
"How do I do this? How does one give this kind of news?"
Against the monster, Rathos, he remembered Shay had called it. He'd felt courageous, determined, a warrior. But against this monster, this grief and pain, he felt powerless. He shifted his stance slightly and a board creaked. Kyla's eyes darted to where he stood.
"Gray?"
She abandoned her post as he stepped forward into the light. He felt his own body begin to shake, but willed it to stop. He had to be strong. For her. In the end, he didn't have to say anything at all, because the truth was etched as clearly in his expression as a torrent of tears would have been.
"Oh, Roth,"
Kyla said, falling into his arms. He pulled her against him, held her as her strength flagged, scooped her up with one arm and carried her as she wept against his neck.
"I'll return soon," he mouthed to Shay,
who was watching him. She nodded gravely and went back to spooning soup. Gray carried Kyla to her cabin, laid her on her bed. She turned away, toward the wall, and he crawled in beside her, wrapping an arm around her chest, his knee touching the back of hers, like there were a twin set of spoons nestled together.
"I am not powerless," he thought. "She just needs me to be with her, even if I can't change the past."
So he stayed with her for a long time, absorbing the tremors of her body as she wept, soaking the sheets with tears of sorrow. Kyla was finally sleeping. Gray had checked on Shay, but she was sleeping too, sitting upright in a chair next to Eric's bed, a half-empty bowl of thin soup still in her lap. He'd quietly stolen away, above decks, where the jewel too bobbed and shifted on the waves. The sun was just peeking over the horizon, shooting lines of silver orange across the waters. Those seamen who were uninjured in the attack were industriously patching damage to the ship, which apparently would survive the day. Unlike her captain. In some ways, Gray felt like the ship should be purposely sunk, taking Captain Smithers with her. In some ways, he thought maybe the captain would have wanted that. He paced past the sailors, ignoring their dark stares as they took in his grim expression. He couldn't speak of the dead, not now. He leaned on a section of the railing that was chipped and splintered, but still, remarkably, intact. Staring out over the sea, he assessed the damage. Three ships were gone altogether, replaced by naught but wreckage being spread across the waters by wind and currents. Where would it wash up? Would the people who found a barrel here or a piece of rope there wonder where it had come from? Would they care? Nine ships remained, including the Jewel too. Men and women trolled the waters in rowboats, seeking to recover the bodies of the dead. How did this happen? He wondered. No, he knew how. But why? What was the meaning of so much needless destruction? He'd been avoiding these very thoughts from the moment the sea monster was blinded, shrieking and sinking beneath the surface. Because the monster's name wasn't the only one Kyla had uttered. No, she'd said another. Rhea. A cleared throat behind him made Gray flinch. Shay was several steps away, watching him.
"Eric will live," she said.
Gray nodded. He was glad for it. Despite the rocky start to their acquaintance, the man was good for Shay, bound to her by a power greater than even blood.
"He will need your help," Shay said next.
Gray frowned. "Help with what?"
"I don't understand."
She gestured to his arm, and he had to look before he caught her meaning. His knife hand glinted. He felt a fool for not thinking of it himself. He'd grown so accustomed to not having a hand that he rarely gave it a moment's consideration. But losing a leg...
"I will help him come to terms with it. I will remind him that a leg is better than a life, something I wish I'd had someone to remind me of. Thank you."
"Shay?" She didn't answer, taking quick steps over to stand beside him. She peered toward the horizon for a few moments before she spoke.
"I held Eric's hand."
Gray knew what she meant.
"What did you see?"
Her words seemed to come from a faraway place, her eyes as distant as the horizon she was watching.
"High cliffs, red rocks, a long throat filled with soldiers. They will die. They will all die."
Gray remembered what she'd said before, about Fanes being central to whatever was happening, the fate of the Four Kingdoms. And what she was describing could only be one place, though he'd never been there.
"The Bloody Canyons," he said.
"That's where the battle will take place." He thought of something else.
"Before the attack, you mentioned Rhea. You said she'd lost control. If she ever had it.
Regardless, what did you mean?"
"She summoned Rathos. So many dead, Captain Smithers. How could she do that? Why?"
He didn't know why he still expected Rhea to be better than she was, especially considering his missing hand was a daily reminder of just how awful she could be. And yet he did.
"She did it to save her people. She didn't know the monster would come here. But it did."
Shay didn't deny it.
"The battle," Gray said,
stabbing his knife hand into the railing and trying to vanquish thoughts of Rhea in the same way he'd blinded the monster. Though he'd been unable to recover the dagger Kyla had given him, he'd replaced the blade with another.
"This is who I am now, half human, half blade."
She nodded.
"Some of the fate marked will be there."
"Bane?"
"I sensed a darkness, but cannot be sure. He is the wind. Distance is as narrow as a silk ribbon to the King's Bane."
"And the others?" She ran a hand along the chipped railing, seemingly unbothered by the rough surface.
"A man, half Venetian, half Terran. He controls many."
Gray frowned.
"Controls?" "A slave army."
His jaw locked, salt gritting between his teeth.
"We must stop them both." "Maybe," she said, There is another, too. She is lost, but determined. She is our purpose. I see it now.
Who is she?
The Keeper of Souls,
Shay said. She turned and left, leaving Gray as puzzled as ever. Eric fell. Gray offered his hand to steady him, but the pirate slipped from his grasp and tumbled to the deck, grimacing.
"Useless leg,"
Eric muttered. "It's not your leg," Gray said, offering him his hand. "Your entire body must get used to the new distribution of weight." Eric stared at his hand. Well, not at the hand he was being offered, but at where Gray's other hand should be, replaced by the dagger.
"Because I'm missing a leg. Because you cut it off."
Gray winced at the reminder. He knew he'd had no choice, but still. He hated the Furia for what they'd done to him, how they'd maimed him. He could only imagine what Eric thought of him.
"And I'm supposed to help him?"
"Yes, I will. For my sister, if not for him."
"I'm only giving you a hard time,"
Eric said, grasping his hand and yanking him down to the deck. He barely managed to steady himself by jabbing his knife into the wood. Eric wobbled to his foot and said,
"Let's try again."
It went on like that for a long time, Eric trying to use the crutch they'd fashioned from driftwood from one of the sunken ships. Failing, mostly. Falling a lot. Eventually he grew frustrated and requested a break. Once more, the Pirate King eyed Gray's blade.
"I guess a blade leg wouldn't be of much use," he said.
"No, but a wooden peg could help give you balance. As soon as you heal, we'll give it a try."
Eric extended his hand, the proper one, to shake Gray's. Surprised, Gray hesitated for a moment before taking it. Both of their grips were strong as they clasped hands. Eric said,
"Thank you. You saved my life."
Grudgingly, Gray had to admit this man was as good as they came.
"If I lost a leg..."
There was no way he'd be thanking the man who'd cut it off, even if it had saved his life.
"You're welcome," he said. "Now, go, rest. We will make landfall soon."
As soon as Eric was gone, Gray returned to the helm. No one had told him he was the captain of the ship now, but when it was time for a decision to be made, it was he who made it. At least until Eric was well enough to command the fleet once more. He watched the sailors for a few minutes. They dutifully performed their tasks, but he could see something was missing. Their usual energy. The sound of raucous singing and chesty laughter.
Joy. That's what is missing.
These were men who once relished the voyage, rather than the destination. Now they seemed to complete tasks simply because they needed to be completed. The sun was already sinking toward the horizon, so Gray made a decision.
"Make anchor,"
he shouted, stopping all activity in its tracks. Several of the men blinked, staring at him.
"Did I stutter?"
he said. The joyless activity resumed, and soon a red flag was hoisted, signaling to the rest of the fleet that their day of sailing was finished. Red flags rose to the top of each ship, and anchors splashed down into the water. Gray joined his men, helping to rein in the sails, tying them off while the anchor was lowered into the depths. When they finished, he said,
"Raise the black flag."
Though several eyebrows were raised, this time there was no hesitation in carrying out his order. The black flag meant one thing. Fleet meeting. It took the better part of 3 hours for the other ships to shuttle all their men and women over to the Jewel II. And by the time they were assembled shoulder to shoulder on the decks, night had well and truly fallen, the sky glistening with stars.
"They almost look like unshed tears," Gray thought, staring up at them.
Kyla sat nearby on a barrel, playing with something shiny between her fingers. She hadn't wanted to come above decks, but Gray had insisted. Shay was there too, sitting on the steps with Eric, his crutch within reaching distance. The rest of the group were eerily silent, staring up at where Gray stood. He took a step forward until he was flush with the upper railing, looking out over them, a collection of long-time pirates and career sailors. They were friends and comrades, broken several times, but never destroyed.
Not on my watch, Gray thought. After a few moments of silence, Gray spoke.
You are probably wondering why I gathered you here. You are probably expecting a rousing speech, something to get your blood pumping, to push you toward the end of this journey. If so, you will be sorely disappointed.
He shook his head.
No, this is a night of sorrow.
He let that sink in. He felt Kyla's eyes on him, and turned to look at her. The thing she'd been playing with dangled from her fingertips, a silver necklace bearing some kind of bauble. Something in her expression told him she knew why they were here now, and that same something told him she approved, which was important to him.
I can do this. We lost many of our ranks, too many, friends, loved ones, family. We should not have to move on like it never happened. It did happen, and tonight we remember. Tomorrow we bring our sorrow with us. We carry this great burden that is ours. Not on one or two of our shoulders, but on all our shoulders. We bear it together.
Slowly, heads were nodding, mouths pressed into firm, determined lines. Gray gestured to a pile of wreckage heaped in one corner of the ship. Before they'd set sail, he'd had as much of it recovered as possible.
This is our funeral pyre. Our dead should not be burned or sunk into the deep. No, they will go together, on the same decks they stood strong on, fought on, breathed the last breaths on. They will sail the high seas for the eternities, long after our own bodies have turned to dust. And they will be remembered.
He paused, meeting as many eyes as he could in that short time, settling on Kyla's last of all.
Who is with me?
Her eyes sparkled with grief. But not just grief, life, too.
I am,
she said, a chorus of agreement following from the rest of the ship. Late into the night they toiled, using scraps of severed rope and twine to bind the wreckage together, lowering it into the water. Then the bodies were brought up, lowered onto the makeshift barge. Captain Smithers was last. Kyla kissed her fingertips and then placed them on his forehead. Fighting back tears, she covered his face with a cloth and helped lower him onto one of the planks below. It shifted under his weight, but stayed afloat.
Go, father,
she said, her voice trembling.
This shall be your final voyage, and it shall be a glorious one. May you meet mother again.
They watched, no one speaking until the shadows had claimed the small vessel and those they'd lost, until, one by one, they departed, returning to their respective ships or below decks to sleep. Gray and Kyla continued to watch, long after that, until only they were left. And then they watched some more, arms around each other, connected by grief and life, and a renewed sense of purpose.
Land ho!
The crow cried, high in his nest. Shortly the announcement was verified by watchmen from the other ships. Gray allowed himself a deep sigh of relief. Though getting around the southeastern tip of Fanes had only required an extra day of sailing, his anxiety had grown with each passing minute.
The sea monster is maimed at worst, dead at best, he reminded himself once more. We have nothing to fear from the ocean.
It was a lie, he knew, but one he needed to cling to for a while longer, just long enough to keep those he cared about safe. Men and women pirates who had been off duty and resting were beginning to emerge from below decks, lining the railings of each ship, staring toward the growing line of land against the western horizon. The excitement in the air was palpable. Kyla emerged, too, and Shay and Eric, the three of them making their way to Gray's side.
Are you rested?
Gray asked them. They nodded in turn, though he knew for a fact Kyla hadn't been sleeping much.
We'll fashion a cart fit for a pirate king, Gray said to Eric. I'll pull it myself if I have to. With one arm,
Eric said, a glint of amusement in his eyes.
I'm stronger than I look. Indeed, but I won't need a cart. I will walk.
Gray appreciated the determination in his voice, even if he knew it was impossible. In fact, he'd already had a cart constructed. When the pirate king grew weary,
he would ride.
"What is going to happen?"
Kyla asked no one in particular. The arid desert was coming into focus, an empty wasteland, devoid of anything but the occasional rock or gnarled plant. Further north were the rocklands, a cluster of red-sheathed boulders, intermittently spired with tall, thin rock formations. Gray knew from studying the ship's maps that a day's hard march to the west would bring them to the bloody canyons.
"It doesn't matter,"
Gray finally answered, when no one else did. "All that matters is that we'll be there, fighting for something." No one else said anything, not until they reached the rocky shoreline and made anchor. Sailors began preparing the small boats that would ferry them across in groups. Shay and Eric made their way down the steps to gather with the others. It was only then that Kyla said,
"I overheard what you and your sister were talking about before."
When Gray looked at her quizzically, she clarified,
"When you left me to sleep, I couldn't. So I came above decks to find you. Shay was there. You were talking about her visions."
Gray had shared the high-level information with the crew, so they could reroute in order to make landfall at the closest point to the Bloody Canyons. But he had held back what he'd learned about Rathas, and,
"I heard what you said about Rhea."
Gray's heart skipped a beat. This woman had taken so many hits already, but that didn't mean she couldn't be knocked down. Then again, he knew if she was, she'd get right back up.
"Still, I was going to tell you."
He thought it was true, but couldn't be certain.
"But you didn't, which tells me something."
"What?"
"You are a damn fool sometimes, Grey Aris."
That, he knew, was true.
"Tell me. You still have feelings for that witch."
"What?" He almost blurted out the question again, but held back, his mind racing. It was a mad statement. How could he have feelings for the woman who'd turned him over to the Furia, the Furia who'd taken his hand and tortured his sister? The same woman who had summoned the monster that killed dozens of their crew members and Kyla's father.
"Because you do. Because you're a damn fool, just like she said."
Hence the divide he continued to feel between he and Kyla, despite the fact that she was an incredible, beautiful woman he cared deeply about. He didn't know what to say, so he said nothing, his silence almost as bad as blurting out the truth.
"Oh, gods, what have I done?"
he thought, as he saw a myriad emotions flutter across her face. Surprise first, like maybe she'd been clinging to hope that she'd been wrong, expecting him to deny her accusation. Then sadness, her eyes blinking rapidly. Finally, anger, deep-seated and complete, her beautiful eyes narrowing to scythes.
"If I meet her, I will kill her,"
Kyla said. Before Gray could even consider how to respond to that, she turned and walked away. Gray hated himself for not going after her. Up close, Fane's was much the same as it had looked from a distance, arid, dry, empty. Gray kicked a stone, sending it clattering across other stones. Most of the pirates were assembled on the dusty shore now, the last of the boats just now reaching the coast. The anchored ships looked small and unimposing from afar. Gray wondered whether he would ever set foot on their decks again. Eric stood nearby, next to Shay. Though he tried to hide it, Gray could see he was in pain, his jaw tight, his teeth locked.
"You should stay behind with the ships,"
Gray said.
"No,"
Eric growled.
Shay said, "We must go together. We are the only hope for the Keeper of Souls."
Gray didn't feel like getting more enigmatic answers, so he left it at that. Kyla was helping to assemble the pirates, who were unused to organizing a supply train. They had several carts laden with food and water for the day's trek, and hopefully back again. Beyond that, who knew? She seemed to sense Gray's gaze and looked up, her eyes meeting his. Her expression was a mask.
"If I meet her, I will kill her."
Gray looked away first. They started walking without fanfare, the oppressing heat assaulting them from above as the breeze died down. Soon most of the pirates were wetting their clothing and draping it over their faces. The men stripped off their shirts and hitched their trousers to their knees. The women tied their shirts to the sides of their ribs and rolled up their sleeves. They were a bedraggled bunch, their clothes dirty and salt and blood-stained, but none complained. They'd been through worse. A little heat wouldn't stop them now. Sweat dripped from Gray's chin and pooled in the small of his back. He longed for the cool winds that rode the ocean waves, the spray of waves crashing against timber. Her face appeared in his mind, dashing away all else. Not Kyla. Rhea.
Oh, gods, what is wrong with me?
Gray wanted to scream, wanted to slap himself, anything to erase the memory of the woman who'd nearly destroyed him. But he couldn't. And he couldn't erase the desire to see her again.
What would you say if you did see her?
He pictured it.
Good day, princess. I mean, Queen Rhea. Your pet monster killed my friends and my girlfriend's father. Did you know that?
Kyla came out of nowhere, punching him hard in the arm.
Did you say something?
No.
Your lips were moving.
Were they?
You looked crazy. Still do.
Must be the heat.
Bollocks.
Probably.
Kyla's lips quirked slightly, like she wanted to smile.
Kill her.
How do you like Fanes? Gray asked, trying to forget her threat. He was also trying not to stare at her midriff, which was bare, beaded with sweat.
Not much.
Me either.
They stuck to the edge of the Red Rocklands, which, if the ship maps were correct, would eventually bring them to the mouth of the Bloody Canyons. And if Shay was right...
What am I thinking? Of course Shay is right. She always is.
The sun arced higher. Impossibly, the day got hotter. They halted their march, squeezing into the cool shadows cast by the largest boulders and spires. They ate little and drank copious amounts of water.
Too much,
Gray thought, wondering how they would have enough for the return trip. But he didn't stop them. Based on the flushed, sweaty faces and weary expressions, the pirates needed it. When they rose again, Eric could barely stand.
You have to ride,
Gray said. One of the supply carts will do.
I'm not a cripple,
Eric said, but there was little fight in him.
You will be if you try to walk the rest of the way. It will take time to build up extra strength in your leg. Trust me, I know.
The king huffed out a breath, but didn't argue further, allowing them to help him into a cart half filled with water. The other half had already been drunk, the shrunken water skins making a soft mattress for the pirate to lie on. Gray took a turn on the cart, Kyla on the opposite side. Shay walked with them, never straying far from Eric's side. For some reason it grated on Gray's nerves. He tried to take a deep breath, but the best he could manage was a shallow inhalation.
It's this heat,
he thought.
It will make us all short-tempered.
The wind picked up again, and Gray could almost feel the collective sense of relief that rippled through the group. Despite all they'd been through, they were still 300 strong. These men and women had shown great mettle so far. Gray had to hope they could survive whatever was to come. The wind, and that thought, lent strength to his legs as they soldiered on.
I feel them,
Shay said.
Do you feel them?
What?
Feel who?
Gray asked. But she wasn't talking to him. Her gaze trained on Eric in his cart.
Yes, he said. There are two. No, wait. There is a third, as distant as a star.
Shay nodded her agreement.
I feel their marks calling to us.
Gray understood now. The fate marked. That was who they could feel. Three of them were in Fanes already, not including Shay and Eric.
We are close now,
he said.
Come on. The day draws closer to its end.
They marched on. Soon the sun was more than halfway to the far horizon. The air began to cool. Someone said,
I see it!
And then others were joining in the cry. Gray sat down the cart, clambering up beside Eric, who was already craning his neck to look. Gray's breath caught. Not only because of the wide gap between the rocklands, treacherous cliffs standing sentinel at the mouth of the broad canyon, but because of what he saw gathered before it in the desert. Soldiers, standing in perfect rows,
their leather armor seeming to soak up the sun rather than reflect it. There were thousands upon thousands. Suddenly his 300 felt like a single grain of sand in the desert.
63. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Jai Jaru.
This is going to be a bloodbath, Jai thought, as he stared at the yawning mouth of the canyon.
Once they entered the monster's throat, there would be no opportunity for a swift retreat. Thousands would die on both sides. Because of me. My orders.
Hordes of vultures, as if sensing the violence to come, soared above the rocklands, drawing lazy circles in the sky. Jai couldn't look at the army, couldn't meet their eyes, their stiff expressions, awaiting his next command. Shanti was nearby, giving orders to her own squad, who were responsible for the traps she'd already set within the canyon. She was making last-minute preparations, ensuring everything was in order, that each member understood their responsibility. Success or failure very much depended on them. Jai trusted Shanti with his life, but that didn't mean her fire route could save all his soldiers. Such a feat was impossible. Men and women will die, he thought. He'd repeated the same statement several times already, trying to come to terms with it. He knew it was necessary if they were going to take Fane's back from the slavers, but that didn't make it any less difficult to swallow. Bitterness coated his tongue. I could still give them a choice, he thought, watching as Shanti finished up and started toward him. I could stop using my justice mark and let them decide what to do. But was the risk too great? Would he lose half his army and risk victory? If so, he would doom them all. He needed to stay the course.
An emerald for your thoughts? Shanti asked as she reached his side.
Is there hope? He asked. She squinted as a ray of light hit her face.
There is always hope, so long as good men and women choose to fight, she said.
You are my hope, he thought, unable to draw his eyes from her.
Thank you. That helps. Now I want to kiss you.
You should, she said, and his lips were upon hers before she'd finished the second word. The kiss was deep but too short. Jai feared he would not get another.
Stop thinking like that. You have well-trained soldiers. You have Shanti. The Black Tears will be here soon. The day can still be won.
A call went up, and they both looked to identify the source. Several people from Shanti's fire route squad were pointing toward the east, gesturing wildly. Jai followed their aim, seeing nothing, nothing, nothing. Figures moved in the desert, stopping almost the second he spotted them.
Who?
He said, unable to finish the question, his lips suddenly dry. Could the Phoenicians have snuck through the rocklands to flank them? The sun was directly on them, and Jai quickly guessed at their number. A few hundred at most. Not a large enough force to flank an army of 10,000. Plus, their clothing was strange. Shirts wrapped around their heads, pants pulled up to their knees. They didn't wear armor, and the only thing in that direction was the sea. Something seemed to pull at him, his marking warming his heel. Inadvertently, he took a step toward them. Shanti didn't seem to notice.
Pirates, she said. What is their lot doing here?
Jai was about to respond when another cry went up, this one from a greater distance, where scouts had climbed the cliffs to gain the best vantage point to watch the northern entrance to the canyons. Two of them were waving their arms. One lifted something, a mirror, which caught the sunlight and reflected it like an exploding star.
The signal.
It's time, Jai thought, his gaze snapping between the pirates and the scout. The Phoenicians had entered the canyon.
Soldiers, he cried. Forward, march!
His justice mark throbbed dully on his heel, pulling him toward the pirates, but he resisted the urge to turn back. If they intervened, he would deal with them then. 64. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Rhea Loren. Rhea was still bound, forced to march at sword point across the flat, harsh terrain. Bane walked with her, a slight limp in his step,
which meant the entire group had to move at a crawl, even those on horseback. Somehow, that made it worse. They marched in the center of a great army, several thousand leather-clad men at the least. Perhaps 1,000 rode the enormous black Phoenician horses, maintaining the flanks of the column. Those men on foot at the front would be the head of the spear thrust, cutting through the enemy with the blades strapped to their wrists and ankles. But not before their long-distance weapons had their chance. There was something inevitable about a march into a canyon, Rhea thought, as the cliffs surrounded them on both sides. Going back was no option. The sides were steep and unclimbable, which left only forward. If the way was blocked, then that was the end. Inevitable. She wondered what would be waiting for her in the canyon. "Do not fear, Rhea," Bane said, in that hollow tone of his. "Fate is with us." Rhea fought to keep her expression mild, disinterested. She still didn't know what had stayed her hand when he'd appeared back in her cell, exhausted, prone, vulnerable. All she'd had to do was sneak up behind him and wrap her hands around his neck and squeeze. It's what he deserved. He killed my father. She'd thought about it long and hard. And then she'd done nothing. Pity, she thought. I pity him. And I can no longer kill that which I pity. She wondered if it was true, or if she'd just lost her nerve. If I get another chance, Roth himself won't be able to stop me. What do you call fate? I call the wickedness of a harsh world, she finally said, realizing he was still waiting for a response. He laughed, his limp growing more pronounced. The hollows under his eyes were dark and gaunt, like he hadn't slept for days. His eyes, though full of mirth now, carried the weight of weariness. Soon you will see, he said. I've seen what lesser men only dream of seeing. And what is that? She was growing tired herself, but of his antics, not the journey. The beginning. And the end. What, no middle? She couldn't keep the edge out of her voice. The middle is unimportant. I think I finally understand that. In some ways, she wished she felt the same way. But to her, the middle is everything. The sun was blocked now, the air growing cooler. If Rhea closed her eyes, she could almost believe she was back in Night's End, standing on her balcony watching the sunset. Almost. She sighed, that feeling of inevitability pressing down on her once more. Bane had told her about her cousin's escape from prison. He told her they'd made it through the gates to the west. He had no reason to lie to her, which meant she'd achieved what she set out to do. Even if it wasn't her hand that had freed them, they were free. Ennis and Gaia could rejoin their brothers and sister. They would be able to tell Sai what had happened. The army would hold the border rather than marching into a pointless war with Fanes. It was a weight lifted from her shoulders, leaving her with only one final regret, that her child was now in grave danger because of her reckless actions. No one was coming to rescue her. And yet, giving up was the furthest thing from her mind. All she needed was an opening, and she would take it. A smile had just begun to curl the edge of her lips when the first man exploded in a flash of fire, his dismembered arms and legs falling amongst the throng. More fell, sharp shards of metal and stone protruding from their bodies. 65. The Southern Empire, approaching Hemptown. Gareth Ironclad. Gareth wasn't certain what he expected when they marched into Fanes, but it wasn't this. They'd been unmolested as they rode through the gates, ignored as they passed through the desert, and now? It's a ghost town, he thought, watching a thick clump of dried scrub grass blowing across the wasteland. Hemptown was practically deserted. Those who appeared in the streets quickly scurried away, slamming doors and shuttering windows. Ennis's eyes met his as if to say, I told you. Though he'd made it clear that Bane and his army planned to travel further south, Gareth didn't think that meant leaving one of the border cities wholly unprotected. Madness, he thought. Then again, From his few experiences with the death-marked boy, madness was just another day in his life. Unless he wants us to pursue him.
What?
The question came from Sai, who sat erect in the saddle, scanning the empty streets with the aloofness of one in power. Why else would the Phoenicians fail to repair the gates? Why would Bane withdraw his armies from the border? Sai scowled. They have a rebellion on their hands. Their emperors have been dropping like dung from my horse's backside. Ennis said,
Gareth's right. Bane knew we were coming. Rhea made it very clear to him.
It doesn't change anything, Sai said. We will crush them. Between the rebels and us, Bane and his so-called army will be an overripe apple between hammer and anvil.
Gareth agreed, despite the sense of foreboding he felt. Though he didn't care whether the Phoenicians destroyed themselves, he wanted to find Rhea, if only to make peace with his own uncertainties about her. Who was the real Rhea Loren? His need to know was like a fast-growing plant twisting inside him. Or maybe it was just a distraction from his feelings of isolation. Either way, there was no going back now. Not for him. Ennis shook his head.
We are walking into a nest of snakes.
Then we shall chop off their heads, Sai said, with what Gareth was beginning to think was an overabundance of bravado. Maybe he's compensating for something. Maybe he's scared.
They rode on, until Sai finally commanded a furrier to drag one of the villagers from the stone hut she was hiding in. The narrow-eyed Phoenician woman kicked and shouted the whole way, but didn't look scared when facing Sai Loren. In fact, she spat at his feet and made a rude gesture.
When did the army depart the city? Sai said flatly.
Rut you, she said.
Sai gestured to one of his furia, who swiftly backhanded the woman across the face. Her head snapped to the side, and when it flopped back, blood trickled from the corner of her mouth. But the furia wasn't finished. She drew a knife, placing the tip at the woman's throat. Still, she didn't balk.
You can slice me from head to feet, and I won't answer your questions.
Or perhaps we underestimated these people, Gareth thought.
Sai said, As you wish, and made a slashing motion across his own throat.
Wait!
The shout came from the same door she'd just been pulled from, and a young boy, perhaps 13, emerged at a sprint. He skidded to a stop before the woman, who growled,
Get back inside!
She shifted slightly, just enough for the blade at her throat to draw blood.
I won't,
the boy said, sticking out his chin.
I won't let you die, Marta. Don't you say a word,
the woman tried to shout, but was quickly cut off when a rag was stuffed in her mouth and tied around the back of her head.
They rode out at midday, when the sun was at its hottest,
the boy said. His skin was tan, his hair jet black. He wore a high-necked shirt and no sleeves, which struck Gareth as an odd combination. In truth, he'd never really studied the culture of the southern empires of Calip and Fanes. He and his brother's focus had always been on the military tactics of their desert-dwelling enemies.
3, maybe 4 hours ago,
Sai said, confirming it with one of his men, who was responsible for coordinating timed attacks. It was a decent head start, but if the strength of the rebellion wasn't overstated in the streams they'd received, Bane's army would face heavy resistance, slowing their pace south. There was still time to catch up.
They marched through the bloody canyons?
Sai asked. Again the woman tried to shout through the rag, but all that could be heard was a muffled, wordless groan. The boy nodded.
And, before you ask, they were 7,000 strong at the least. The entire strength of the 4 border cities combined. Perhaps 1,000 mounted.
Do you know if they had a prisoner with them?
Gareth blurted out.
A woman with a scarred face.
The boy's eyebrows rose.
How did you know? She marched next to the commander himself, the king's bane. But she was a prisoner, her ankles and wrists tied.
Gareth's eyes met Ennis's once more, but the man who had rescued him gave nothing away with his expression. Rhea was alive. That was all that mattered right now.
You've done well, boy, Sai said.
Come, mother,
he said, reaching for the woman's hand.
Kill her,
Sai said coldly,
and before Gareth could even consider intervening, the furious blade had opened her throat. Her eyes widened and her legs crumpled. The boy fell on top of her, tears already leaking from his eyes.
"You didn't have to do that," Gareth said. "You already learned everything you needed. These people are barbarians. They own slaves. They treat the Terrans like possessions. I am merely carrying out Roth's will."
Gareth looked to Ennis for support, but the man merely shook his head and pulled on the reins, turning his horse away. Soon, Sai did the same, leaving Gareth to watch a woman die and her son grieve.
"What have I gotten myself into? Why did I think things could ever change? Roan is a fool. Peace wasn't possible, and even if it was, these people didn't deserve it."
Behind him, one of his legionnaires, an Orion woman with bright purple eyes, said, "Do we follow?" Already the Western army was departing the city, spreading out as they entered the wide expanse of the desert. Gareth wanted to turn back, to break the alliance, but she's Roan's sister. He didn't know if Rhea was worthy of his help, but she'd pursued the Eastern Alliance. She'd stopped Darkspell. If there was a chance she'd changed, or begun to change, he had to try to find her. For Roan. "Yes," he said. "We ride on."
Fourth Interlude. The Crimean Sea. The Horde.
"There is always a choice,"
Clargrah thought, as the first of his ships charged toward the shoreline. As a child, he didn't realize that by running away he was making one, shaping his own destiny. He thought he was escaping, leaving a world that hated him. Little did he know he was creating a new world. His choice now was where to unleash his horde on the Four Kingdoms first. There was something to be said for drawing out his vengeance, relishing it, savoring it like a fine piece of meat. He could start in the south and work his way northward to his destiny, killing and pillaging as they went, destroying a land he'd hated for many years, invading Castle Hill last of all, the crowning achievement of his life. He considered it as his ships slid into the shallows, the wind at his back, filling the sails to bursting. There was no stopping their momentum now, nor did he want to. They wouldn't need these ships again, and he didn't want his enemies to be able to use them to escape. He clutched the railing as the ship jolted, a raucous screeching sound rising from the depths as they scraped along the bottom. Several of the Horde were unprepared for the impact and fell overboard. No matter. Most likely they would swim to shore. If they didn't freeze to death from exposure, they would fall in with their brothers and sisters. The long piers once used for merchant vessels shattered as the ships ploughed through them, sending debris to either side. Planks were crushed in half. Iron fittings strung with thick ropes crushed through their hulls, water rushing in behind. Mortal wounds that would eventually cause each vessel to sink. The Lost Son clutched the railing harder, his hands beginning to ache, a thrill running through him. Long had he waited for this moment of triumphant return. He spotted a boy carrying a fishing rod, staring at him with wide eyes. He turned tail and ran, heading past the arrow-like pylons that announced the sprawling city of Blackstone. He would alert others in the city, but they would not believe him. And anyway, men and women could be hunted. The final impact was jarring, the ship running aground, splintering wood, shearing nail, smashing rock and rending earth. Yes. Clargrah could have taken his horde south first, but that wasn't the choice he wanted to make.
"Now we feast," he shouted.
The horde poured from the ships. Part 5. Roan, Anise, Lisbeth, Sir Dietrich, Gwendolyn, Goggin, Raven. "My poetry has been called dark, a cry for help by a troubled man. But I am not troubled. I only write the truth as I see it. Nor do I need help. No, it's the rest of them that need help." Japati, famous Calypsian poet. 66. The Southern Empire, the Burning Sea. Roan Lorraine,
The voyage had been long and arduous. By the end, Roan was tired of fish and more tired of Windy's thick tea, which she insisted they drink each day. "To prevent seasickness," she said. The worst part had been not knowing what had happened to Gwen or Gareth or even Rhea. He wondered about them all as soon as he woke up and until he fell asleep at night. Had he abandoned them? Was this all a fool's errand? Was Bane right about everything? The best part of each day had been studying books with Yila, though even that had grown tiresome when each new revelation seemed to create countless more questions.
"Got something?" she said now.
They sat in one of the fore cabins on the small private vessel, one that would usually be considered an office, but which they'd transformed into a study, much to the captain's chagrin. The man had quickly learned not to argue with Windy Sands, dutifully collecting his coin and keeping the boat on a southwesterly trajectory. Roan looked up from the book he'd been flipping through. The Death of Absence, a story of woe. It was the book the Western Oracle had written, the very same that Bear Blackboots had scrawled a message in, and Roan had already read it cover to cover a half a dozen times. The Terrans had worshipped a great hole, which they believed descended forever, never reaching a bottom. The most righteous of them, those called the Seven, who had achieved all seven of their virtues, generally became priests and gained the opportunity to commune with their god, Absence, by descending via rope into the hole. It was said that spending too long in the darkness of the pit would drive one to madness. But if one spent the right amount of time, enlightenment. Then, one day, the Terrans found the hole with no bottom filled in with dirt. It had crushed them and their faith, making them ripe for the picking when the Phoenician slave ships arrived on their shores. "There must be more to it," Roan thought, staring at the worn leather cover. "Roan? Gods, he'd done it again. It was happening more and more, his getting lost in his thoughts. "Sorry," he said. "What did you find?" Yila's small face furrowed with concern, her dark skin turning orange in the lantern light. It was late. They should be sleeping. But Roan didn't sleep much anymore. "I'm fine," Roan said. "Really?" He realized he'd said it without her even having to ask the question. She blinked, her ink-dark eyes vanishing and then appearing once more. Their stare was intense as she moved her chair closer, pushing a book in front of him. Her finger showed him where to start reading. "The peacemaker cannot bring peace alone. Yes, he will be a central cog in the wheel of fate. But what is light without dark? What is peace without war? What is life without death?" Roan's heart beat a little faster. The quote was attributed to recovered writings by the Western Oracle. It was so similar to the things Bane had said to him that it was eerie. "This doesn't mean anything," he said. Yila said nothing. She never seemed to have a problem with long silences, and she only spoke when she had something important to say. She merely shrugged and flipped the book closed to show him the title. Lost Prophecies, a Compendium. "How did we miss this before?" he asked, frowning at the unfamiliar cover, which was entirely white. Yila squirmed, looking uncomfortable.
"Well, because I kept this book hidden from you," a voice said from the doorway. Lady Windy stood just inside the cabin, a teacup pinched between two fingers.
"Why?"
Roan's voice had darkened. Was it his imagination, or had the lantern light suddenly grown less bright?
"You make decisions based on emotions. I couldn't have you make the wrong one."
Roan opened his mouth to object, but she continued.
"I don't mean offense. You are human, and humans are emotional beings. But scholars know how to cut through emotion, or even ignore it completely, making decisions based on logic and wisdom. That is why people from across the Four Kingdoms come to me to learn how to study, how to learn."
"Because you're unemotional?"
"Because I'm right," she said,
allowing a wry smile to curl her lips. Roan knew not to be offended, nor surprised. This wasn't the first time the Lady of Citadel had kept something from him. But he still didn't understand why. "You know I've been agonizing about Bane for days," he said. This information would have helped clear the confusion from my head. Windy cocked an eyebrow.